Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Thursday, May 21st, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is A Tale of Two Depressions. We have a lot to get to today. Obviously, it's Thursday. We have an update to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. We have the initial jobless claims numbers. A lot of stuff making the news wires across the news wires today, so we're going to get across those things. But what I'm hoping to get across through the majority of this podcast is a couple pages I want to read from a book that I am currently reading, studying pretty much the entire history of the banking system here in the United States. And I read a couple pages, I read several pages today, but a couple of them, I was reading them as if they were written today. If you changed a couple names, a couple numbers, you would think this was written today. And of course, I am talking about the Great Depression of the 1930s. So I hope we have enough time to get to that. If not, we'll talk about it tomorrow or next week. And as I continue to make my way through this book, if I continue to come across interesting pages and good tidbits of information of how this relates today to the Great Depression, I'm going to continue to do so, because that's what this podcast is all about, because we have been discussing how the government is doing the same things that they have done back then. That's why what would be a severe recession is going to be another depression, and quite possibly, and quite probably, the greatest depression. So first is some market performance. Major indexes were down today. The Russell 2000 was able, I believe, to eke out a gain about 0.3% to close on the day. Right now, during the futures trading, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 0.7%. The S&P also down about 0.7%. NASDAQ 100 also in the red, down about 0.5%. And the cash trade in Japan, they are down 0.6%. Across the pond, pretty much all in the red. In the European markets, down anywhere from 1-1.5%, although the Spanish markets were relatively flat. Cash trade in Australia down 0.5%. Cash trade in China, stocks are also down 1%. Commodities pulling back slightly here, actually a little bit more than slightly. Crude oil, WTI, currently down 5%, $32.16 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, down 4%, $34.56 a barrel. Natural gas continues its southward trajectory, trading at $1.69 per million British thermal units. Gold and silver getting hit a little bit today, no surprise, especially with silver's run-up. So gold is now trading at $1,725 an ounce. Silver is at $16.80 per ounce. Nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down, but I do believe long-term bull market when it comes to the precious metals space. Uncle Sam's 10-year Treasury note yielding 0.66%. Now, I'm just going to go pretty much down the list of some data points that I have on those Federal Reserve numbers, initial claims, et cetera, et cetera. With the Fed BS, and of course we're talking about balance sheet, it's official. The Federal Reserve's balance sheet is now north of $7 trillion. This is no surprise to us here at the Capital News, or quite frankly, anybody who's been paying attention. $7 trillion. Okay, this is a week-over-week increase of about $103 billion. By the time this is all said and done, it's most likely that this balance sheet is going to be in the double digits. 10 trillion, 11, 14 trillion. Who knows where it's going to stop, but it will most likely be in the double digits. Remember, we've been focusing here on remarks and commentary from the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, in conjunction with Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary. They're ready to go all in. They've been saying this for weeks. We'll do whatever it takes. Now, of course, the Federal Reserve says we've done so much already. We've done, you know, we haven't hit our limits, but there's only so much we can do from a liquidity standpoint. It's really up now to you, Congress and the White House, to come together and push more fiscal programs. But don't worry, wink, wink, nod, nod, we're going to stand at the ready to buy all of that debt that you have to issue. Why? Because Uncle Sam is as broke as a joke. We are borrowing 50 cents on every dollar. It will get worse before this is over. This is completely unsustainable. That's why there was no bid, no interest whatsoever for a 50-year bond or a 100-year Bond, okay? Somebody who was born today would be paying that bond 100 years till they're dead. Till they're dead. They could have great-grandchildren who would be paying that interest. That's immoral, it's unethical, it's un-American. There's a lot of idiots running around, but they weren't that big of an idiot to say, yeah, we'll take it. They didn't want it. They didn't want it. They didn't want the 50-year bond. They didn't want the 100-year bond. Thank goodness. And generations who don't even exist yet are saying thank you as well. But don't be surprised if they continue to try it another time. $7 trillion, another increase of $103 billion. Everybody's ready to print, spend, borrow, beg, do whatever they got to do. Anything but the truth. An increase of over $200 billion as well in the M2 money stock. Continued claims. Again, now we're going to the unemployment numbers here. Continued claims stand at 25 million. 25 million, we imagine this will be further updated as we continue making our way through this. We're going to break it down a little bit. Working age population. These are people aged 15 to 64 years old. All persons in the United States, 15 to 64, that comes to about 206 million Americans. All right, keep that number in the back of your head, 206 million. We have initial jobless claims coming out today, 2.4 million. An additional 2.4 million Americans have filed in the prior week for unemployment insurance. This takes our number to about 38.5 million Americans filing for unemployment insurance over the past 9 weeks. Okay, so you take that number, you divide it by that 206 figure, coming out to about 18%, a little bit more than that. I mean, you're almost at one out of every five Americans, because one-fifth is 20% of Americans who have filed for unemployment insurance just over the last 9 weeks. This, of course, does not include people who have their hours cut, their pay cut, working part-time for economic reasons. We'll get those new numbers out in a couple weeks. That'll be the May jobs report. That'll be the first Friday in June. We will take the time to read that report in its entirety, just like we did earlier this month in regards to April's jobs report. Not looking good, folks. It's just a simple continuation of poor economic data. Yesterday, we joked, maybe the stock market was finally catching up to itself, catching on to what the trend that we've been discussing here for weeks. The bigger the number to the downside when it comes to initial claims, the bigger the rally on Wall Street. Well, they say, well, it's going to come out tomorrow. Let's just have our rally on Wednesday. And that's exactly what happened, because today they were down. Now, we're typically seeing numbers 3 million, 4 million, 5 million, 6 million, almost 7 million at the peak. Those were big numbers. Now it's just 2.4. The market, I guess, doesn't care. They think that's too good. So they sold off today. Financial World of Oz. This is, you can't make sense of any of this stuff. You just can't. It's completely out of control. So there you have it. Federal Reserve's balance sheet officially over $7 trillion. I don't know how they're going to get back to normal. I don't know what normal is going to be. Nobody asks these questions. Senate Banking Committee. What's going to be normal, Mr. Chairman Jerome Powell? What's going to be normal? How are you going to normalize? What's that number? Is it going to be $3.4 trillion, $5 trillion, $6 trillion, $7? Because we're not done. Maybe $7 trillion will look normal by the time we're done with all of this. What's the cost, Mr. Chairman? Is there a free lunch? What are the effects going to be on the other side of this? We're broke. The states are broke. Who's going to pay for this? Are taxes going to have to go up? What's the inflation rate going to be? What are you going to tolerate as an inflation rate? Nobody asks these questions. These are pretty simple questions. Month of April, an additional 1.6 million. 1.6 million home loan delinquencies. That's just for the month of April. Month of April, 15 million credit card payments delinquent. Month of April, 3 million auto loans delinquent. This is not getting better, ladies and gentlemen. The Fang Man stocks, FANGMAN. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA have a combined market cap of $6.1 trillion. Fangman, that's seven stocks. Total market capitalization combined $6.1 trillion. This is now higher than where it was when stocks were at all-time highs back in February. Okay? We'll talk about cuckoo pots, all right? This is nuts. Little perspective, $6.1 trillion. That's the combined GDP of Germany and Italy. This all makes sense to you? These valuations, you think this is stable here? Be my guest. Good luck. Some other headlines before we get into the tale of two depressions. China is attempting to pass a law aimed at Hong Kong. I'm sure you've gotten into this a little bit, seen this on the mainstream media. We'll talk about this further, but right now I want to focus more on the depression, the economic stuff. But here, it's all tied together. You know, we've been talking about global protests. They are not transitory. They are history in the making. It was bad before COVID-19. It's going to be even worse now. What do you think the people in Hong Kong are going to do? Because this is not a friendly bill. This is to take more rights and sovereignty away from Hong Kong and the people of Hong Kong. So buckle up. Buckle up. You also have the United States selling arms to Taiwan. Well, that's going to be another interesting little skirmish, little battle, little conflict brewing over there in Asia as well. Of course, this is all part of the blame game that we've been talking about here for weeks. The rhetoric is going to pick up. The showmanship is going to pick up. The puffery of the chest, the flexing of the arms, it's all going to step up. We've been telling you, and here it is. So now, a tale of two depressions. I really just want to focus on a couple pages. I've mentioned this gentleman's name before. He is no longer with us. An Austrian economist, Murray Rothbard, M-U-R-R-A-Y, Rothbard, R-O-T-H-B-A-R-D. Buy every book he's ever written. Please, do yourself a favor. Austrian economist, that's what I most likely align myself with when it comes to that economic rationality. Title of this book is A History of Money and Banking in the United States, the Colonial Era to World War II. About 500-some pages, I'm about halfway through. And again, when I was reading it this afternoon, I came across, again, several pages, but a couple that I want to make sure that I take the time here during today's podcast to read to the audience, because all you have to do is switch out a couple names, switch out a few numbers, and it would be as if this was written in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Economist, the Washington Post. You pick your outlet, that this would have been a legitimate article, a legitimate analysis. Okay? So I'll begin a few pages. Now, this section is titled here, The Hoover Fed, and of course he is referring to President Hoover. So the Hoover Fed, Harrison and Young, and these are a couple individuals who comprise the Federal Reserve. While Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover had been a severe critic of Strong's inflationary policy. Strong was a member of the Federal Reserve. Unfortunately, however, Hoover was in favor of a different form of easy money and cheap credit. When he became president, he tried, like King Canute, to hold back the tides by continuing to generate cheap bank credit and then using, quote, moral suasion to extort banks and other lenders not to lend money for the purchase of stock. Okay. Let me continue here. I'm continuing. By June 1929, it was clear that the absurd policy of moral suasion had failed. Seeing the handwriting on the wall, Norman, now we're going overseas here, Bank of England governor, Norman switched and persuaded the Federal Reserve to resume its old policy of inflating reserves through subsidizing the acceptance market by purchasing all acceptances offered at a subsidized rate, a policy the Fed had abandoned in the spring of 29. Now, there's a whole history you could go down when it comes to Montagu Norman, governor of the Bank of England during this time. Very manipulative, very influential on convincing American central bankers within the Federal Reserve to do a lot of the bidding for the British. Very interesting in and of itself. Despite this attempt to keep the boom going, sound familiar? However, the money supply in the United States leveled off by the end of 1928 and remained more or less constant from then on. This ending of the massive credit expansion boom made a recession inevitable, and sure enough, the American economy began to turn down in July of 1929. Feverish attempts to keep the stock market boom going, however, managed to boost stock prices while the economic fundamentals were turning sour, leading to the famous stock market crash of October 24th. Sound familiar, doesn't it? Keeping the stock market boom going. A disconnect between stock prices and the economic fundamentals. Sounds just like today. This crash was an event for which Herbert Hoover was ready. For a decade, Herbert Hoover had urged that the United States break its age-old policy of not intervening in cyclical recessions. During the post-war 1920 to 1921 recession, Hoover, as then Secretary of Commerce, had unsuccessfully urged President Harding to intervene massively in the recession to, quote, do something to capture the Depression, in particular to expand credit and engage in a massive public works program. It's very interesting, ladies and gentlemen. We've discussed the recession. Some even call it a depression of 1920 to 1921. Clearly, just over that time period, it would be more conducive to a recession. But that's why it was a recession and not a true depression. Because the government didn't come running in to, quote, do something. Anything, something, somebody, please. The Congress, the president, the American people understood free market capitalism 100 plus years ago. They understood laissez-faire economics, of letting it be, of letting it resolve itself, of allowing bankruptcies and liquidations to do what they got to do. And they did exactly what they are supposed to do. And it was a recession. And it's not discussed much in history books because it doesn't give any flavor or any support to the government, because the government didn't do something. They said, nope, the market broke it, the market will fix it. And that's exactly what happened, because that is how markets work. But Herbert Hoover was ready for this one. In expanding credit and to engage in a massive public works program. Sound familiar? Just wait till those infrastructure bills start making their way through to the tunes of trillions. Although the United States got out of the recession on its own, again referring to 1920, 1921, without massive intervention, Hoover vowed that next time it would be different. In late 1928, after he was elected president, Hoover presented a public works scheme known as the Hoover Plan for, quote, permanent prosperity, for a pact to outlaw depression, to a conference of governors. Hoover had adopted the scheme of the well-known inflationists, Foster and Catchings, these are their last names, for a mammoth $3 billion public works plan to, quote, stabilize business cycles. $3 billion public works. This is 2020, ladies and gentlemen. We're no longer in the realm of billions. It's now going to be a $3 trillion public works plan. Believe me, we already have Nancy Pelosi and the crazy Democrats pushing $3 trillion. Just wait till another one comes down the pike. William T. Foster was the theoretician and Waddell Catchings the financier of the duo. Foster was installed as head of the Pollock Foundation for Economic Research by Catchings, who was an iron and steel magnate, an investment banker at the powerful Wall Street firm, drumroll please, say it with me, ladies and gentlemen, Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs. Sometimes the names don't even change. Quite astonishing, isn't it? And if you read this book, my God, it is just a spider web of names and rabbit holes. As the late, great George Carlin said, the comedian, it's a big club, folks, and you ain't in it. And my goodness, does Mr. Rothbard explain all of these connections. Who married who? Who's a cousin of who? Whose uncle became president? Who was in charge of this bank, in charge of that railroad, in charge of this oil field? I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. It truly is a big club. When the stock market crash came in October of 1929, therefore, President Hoover was ready for massive intervention to attempt to raise wage rates, expand credit, and embark on public works. Hoover himself recalls that he was the very first president to consider himself responsible for economic prosperity. Does that sound like a current president of the United States? Let me repeat. Hoover himself recalls that he was the very first president to consider himself responsible for economic prosperity. Quote, therefore, we had to pioneer a new field. Hoover's admiring biographers correctly state that, quote, President Hoover was the first president in our history to offer federal leadership in mobilizing the economic resources of the people, end quote. And how did that turn out, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, that's right, the Great Depression. Hoover recalls it was a program unparalleled in the history of depressions. You got that right. The major opponent of this new status dogma was Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Mellon, who, though one of the leaders in pushing the boom, now at least saw the importance of liquidating the malinvestments, inflated costs, prices, and wage rates of the inflationary boom. Mellon indeed correctly cited the successful application of such a laissez-faire policy in previous recessions and crises. But Mr. Hoover overrode Mr. Mellon with the support of Treasury Undersecretary Ogden Mills, which is another one of these characters with a lot of connections, to put it lightly. If Hoover stood ready to impose an expansionist and interventionist New Deal, Morgan, now this is the House of Morgan, J.P. Morgan, okay, so Morgan Man, their inside man, George L. Harrison, head of the New York Fed, and major power in the Federal Reserve, was all the more ready to inflate. George Harrison, let's swap his name out for Mr. Jerome Powell. Stand at the ready to do whatever it takes. Go ahead, Mr. President. Go ahead, Mr. Democrat. Go ahead, Miss Republican. Do what you gotta do. We stand at the ready to print like it's going out of style because it is. During the week of the crash, the last week of October, the Fed doubled its holdings of government securities. My, doesn't that sound familiar? I'm looking at a graph that is straight to the moon. Wonder if that more than doubled. Adding $150 million to bank reserves, as well as discounting $200 million more for member banks. The idea was to prevent liquidation of the bloated stock market and to permit the New York City banks to take over the loans to stockbrokers that the non-bank lenders were liquidating. As a result, member banks of the Federal Reserve expanded their deposits by $1.8 billion, a phenomenal monetary expansion of nearly 10% in 1 week. They're not even close. 1.8, we just did $103 billion in 1 week. My oh my, what a difference 100 years makes. Of this increase, $1.6 billion were increased deposits of the New York City banks. In addition, Mr. Harrison drove down interest rates, get ready for this, lowering its discount rates to banks from 6% to 4.5% in a few weeks. We'd never make it today. We couldn't tolerate 2.25, 2.5%. How did they manage 100 years ago at 6%? 4.5%. And a few pages further, they knock them down to 2. 6%, 4.5%. We can't even withstand 2.25 without the stock market throwing a hissy fit, without Thunder Thumbs throwing a tantrum. Harrison conducted these actions with a will, overriding the objections of Federal Reserve Board Governor Roy Young, proclaiming that, quote, the stock exchange should stay open at all costs, end quote, and announcing, quote, gentlemen, I am ready to provide all the reserve funds that may be needed, end quote. Again, who does this sound like? Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. 100 years later, folks, it's the same song and dance. The only thing that changed, if it was $1 million back then, it was a billion now. If it was a billion then, it's a trillion now. That's all it is. And it's your money. It's your money. You're paying for more and more and more. It's unbelievable. I'm going to definitely continue this conversation tomorrow. There's too much to get to, and I don't want to run too far over with our podcast this evening because there's a lot there. And I know there's some missing parts. I mean, it's a 500-page book. There's a lot of names. It gets confusing. You got to keep them straight. Write them down. Make notes. It's what you got to do sometimes. But it's unbelievable. And I've obviously have other books of Mr. Rothbard's that goes into greater detail of the Great Depression. And you see a lot of these names recurring. Because it's the same thing. When it comes to the establishment of the Federal Reserve, you basically have the House of Morgan, J.P. Morgan, and you have the Rockefellers, obviously of Standard Oil. A lot of times, those two houses, if you will, were in direct conflict with each other. But sometimes they came together. And on one of those rare occasions where they came together, it was for the establishment of the Federal Reserve back in 1913. And when you understand the history of it, they couldn't care less if it was the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, just like they don't care now. They fund both sides. They fund both sides. Are you waking up to the game? Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, it's all theater. It's all theatrics. It's all sport. It means nothing. This is the meat and potatoes. This is the root of the problem. Everything else is a distraction. It's theater. It's for you to have conversation. It's for you to go in your respective silo with those in agreement in your family, your friends. Oh, did you watch Fox News? Yes, I did. Those damn Democrats drive me crazy. Did you watch MSNBC? I sure did. Those damn Republicans drive me crazy. Meanwhile, these people funding this monstrosity are running away with the loot. And the rats are abandoning ship with your money. Trillions of dollars. I think there was a CNBC article out today that said the billionaires in this country, since the lockdown, have made $484 billion. Just the billionaires in this country over the past couple of months have made $484 billion. But don't worry, you should be happy for them because you got $1,200. Sit down and shut up. They're running off with the loot. And people are complaining, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. I want to go out and get a haircut. I want to go get drunk. I mean, give me a break. This is what these people are counting on. That's what you're going to focus on. That you're not going to pay attention to the theft, to the fraud, to the abuse that is taking place right under our noses. But no. Turn on the theater, turn on the mainstream media, and listen to what you want to hear. Because most people don't want to hear this. They don't want to realize that they've been ripped off for 100 years. And you know, it's quite refreshing at some points in this book when this country still had a sense of itself, of what it meant to be an American. Because Congress, especially during 1920, 1921, they were against this. They were against the interventionists. They were against the inflation. They understood free market capitalism. They understood a laissez-faire policy. And they stood up. And the American people understood it too. That's reminiscent to when President Woodrow Wilson was president, following, and quite frankly, during World War I. Wilson was a big internationalist. And he was a big proponent for the League of Nations, which was became the forerunner to the current United Nations. Well, back then, the American people including the Congress, understood what it meant to be an American and that we were not going to give away our sovereignty to some sort of international body. And the Senate would not ratify the United States entering the League of Nations. But the League of Nations did exist. It only took a lot of convincing, wearing it down. We have to be a part of an international community, yada, yada, yada. And then the United Nations made its way. And also, just for a little history, Woodrow Wilson is also responsible for signing into law the income tax and the Federal Reserve. So quite the president he was, wasn't he? And later regretted it. What's that tell you? So it's a lot of history to throw at you, but I hope you picked up the point, and we're going to go through this even further. And I've been saying this here for weeks, if not months. What the government and the Federal Reserve are doing now is what they did during the late 1920s and the early 1930s that turned what would have been a severe recession into what we now call the Great Depression. And at least back then, the United States had a lot more going for it in terms of demographics and in terms of its financial situation, where shortly after World War II, we were the creditor of all creditors. We had most of the world's gold. And you remember the golden rule, not the moral or spiritual one, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. No, no, the worldly golden rule, those with the gold make the rules. Well, we had it. We had it. We had the money. We were the world's creditors. We were the production powerhouse. We had all those things working for us. Now we're as broke as a joke. We're borrowing 50 cents for every dollar we spend. Completely different situation. Which, in my opinion, makes this the greatest depression, and we are just getting started. Death by a thousand cuts. Free was never so expensive. Negative rates are coming. What we talked about yesterday with the DC power play. No consumer, no sale. I mean, every title that we have come up with has been dead on. It's just a matter of time until it comes to fruition. The blame game, depression level unemployment keeps going. American dream or Ponzi scheme. What's another $3 trillion? One after one, the hits just keep on coming, and we're going to pay for it. You better wake up, and you better wake up your family, you better wake up your friends. Because you don't hear this on CNBC, you don't hear this on Bloomberg, you don't hear it on Fox Business, you don't hear it on Fox, CNN, MSNBC. They want to keep you in the arena of stupidity, of ignorance. Focus on this quote from what this guy said about nothing. Then pick up the phone, call your friends, and talk about it. Meanwhile, they're ripping us off to trillions of dollars that we're going to have to pay for, your children are going to have to pay for, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. Higher taxes, higher inflation, lower standards of living. What a combination. What's left for them to take is your retirement. And they're going to get it. Your pension, your Social Security, your 401k. You already have some numbers coming out. News headlines coming out, I think, from Dell Computer. They are stopping their 401k matching because they're cutting costs. Got to save money. Where's it going? This is just getting started, folks. V-shaped recovery, I think not. I think not. This is a tale of two depressions. We know a little bit more about the first one because we had it. We're now in the midst of the greatest depression, and we'll see how this unfolds. But if history is any marker, it's not going to be pretty. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.